Hey, what's up? This is Astro Dem laying in my bed because you know it's my bed in astrology. What's up, y'all? How you doing? I hope you're doing well. So, this week, well, first of all, I'm going to start doing the weekly podcast. I was doing every other week, but, you know, I think I'm going to do weekly and see how it goes. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to do weekly again. So, hopefully, you guys will want to hear me this often. But this week, we're going to talk about, it'll be the last segment of the astrocartography series, where I talk about, like, you know, how to figure out the best planet for you. And so, you know, this one is about the accidental dignity. This is what, like, traditional astrologers would say. All astrologers, technically, but I talked about the sigil dignities, you know, a couple of podcast episodes ago. And that is basically when a planet is in a specific position, in a specific sign, if that sign, supports that planet, or it makes it a little bit more difficult for the planet to express itself in its true fashion and natural fashion, right? That's essential dignity. But accidental dignity is basically, you know, when a planet gains strength for any other reason other than its position, right? Any other reason. And again, because there's an accidental dignity, there can be a accidental debilitation as well. Okay. And so, yes, there could be, you know, a planet that loses strength or gets weakened for any other reason than its, you know, placement too. So, you know, that's another thing. So how did this apply to astral cartography? Well, you want to stay away from the planets that, you know, has accidental debilitation. Excuse me, I can't talk today. I've been saying that a lot lately, right? I don't know what the fuck's happening to Mercury. I know something is, so I'm gonna have to check up on it. Mercury, has it entered Gemini yet? Let's see if Mercury entered Gemini yet. That's what I need. It's, you know what? Because it could be just Mercury and Taurus, which is not like a bad placement, but Taurus is very slow. It's a slow moving energy. So that could be the reason why. I don't know, child. But anyways, it doesn't matter. Let me just go and focus on what I'm talking about. Okay, so, you know, just like how there could be accidental dignities, there could be accidental debilitations as well. And we're going to talk about that, right? And so with astrocartography, you know, you want to maybe push towards the planet that has accidental dignity and stay away from the planet that has accidental debilitation. Now, again, like with any other thing that I was talking about here, you know, what I've noticed with all my years, you know, studying astrocartography, doing chart readings, specifically on astrocartography and everything, the most important like thing to consider when using astrocartography and figuring out which planetary lines you should move to is the aspects that planet that is represented by that planetary line is making to your chart. The aspects is key, right? Because, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, the cardinal points are very important in astrology. That's ascendant, descendant, IC, and MC, right? Very, very important. And so that's why even in a chart, you see their lines are darker, right? And so because of that, like, they are more highlighted in your life. If you have a planet that is aspecting those cardinal points, then that energy is going to be highlighted. And for the people who feel like, you know, I don't know about astrocartography, I don't know about that, you know, if you believe that the cardinal houses, the angular houses, the cardinal points, the angular points, if you recognize that by ancient astrology theory that they're important, why wouldn't us moving around and then having a relocated point now aspecting a planet, why wouldn't you think that wouldn't have an effect on us, right? It is basically using ancient, you know, ancient theory here. Okay, so this is not some like crazy thing, right? So I do want to say that. But with this all being said, you know, you again, when picking what place you want to move to, when considering the astrological energy, like, yes, these little things like accidental dignities, you know, all this little stuff, the what was other things I talked about, like, you know, which decade it's in, which bound it's in, you know, all these things are very important. But the most important is how that planet is aspecting the rest of your chart, because what that, you know, energy is going to do, because now it is aspecting that relocated, you know, angular point. What it's going to do now is like accentuate that energy. So if you've got a lot of squares and oppositions, energy is going to be accentuated. You know what I mean? Because now it is making contact with the relocated cardinal point. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, with all that being said, let's go ahead and talk about accidental dignities. So, an accidental dignity, these are the examples of it, right? When a planet is found on an angle. This is the angular houses near the cardinal points, the angular points, you know? So, this is ascendant, midheaven, descendant, and IC, okay? So, when a planet is in the first, fourth, 7th and 10th, or aspecting the ascendant, descendant, IC, and MC, or not aspecting, on it, when it's on it, you know, that is an accidental dignity, because these points of our chart are very important, are extremely highlighted, and it brings dignity, right? And so this is why when people are like, oh, you have a planet in the 10th house, oh, we got a planet in the first house, okay. Oh, 7th or 4th? You know, that's why it's such a big deal. Because, you know, the angular houses are the most important houses, if you want to be real. You know what I mean? It's how we step into that quadrant that we're talking about within our chart. You know, the first three houses is one quadrant, right? And so, you know, our first house step represents how we kind of show up for ourselves. Fourth house is the leader of the second quadrant. Actually, I think I got the quadrant numbers wrong, but you're getting what I'm saying. It's how you step within your community, and the people around you in general, right? And your interest. And then the seventh house is relationships, and so how you step into relationships. Seventh, eighth, and ninth house are relationship houses. And then the 10th house is how you show up to the world. 10th, 11th, 12th house are the collective houses. You get what I'm saying? So of course, the angular houses are going to be important, right? So when a planet is on the ascendant, midheaven, descendant, and IC, that's really powerful. But, you know, I would extend that and say if it's in the house that is connected to it as well, okay? Another accidental dignity is the energy being direct. So yes, retrograde energy is an issue, okay? It is. So actually, let me do it like this. Let me rewind back. So I talked about like the dignity of like the angular houses. So you may think like, okay, which houses is a, you know, accidental debilitation? Those are the cadent houses. The cadent houses are the 3rd, 6th, 9th, and 12th. So those would be the houses that are actually a accidental debilitation, right? So, you know, people would say like, oh, so you're saying like, I'm a 12th house, so my energy is debilitated? Kinda. It's the, because again, with 12th houses, when you think about it, the energy is always in a transition, so it's hard for the energy to kind of like be solid within itself. And so, for instance, you know, with 12th housers, they do tend to have this hidden aspect to them and can't kind of bring things out forward, you know, like they want to. And that's an issue. You know what I mean? Sixth house could be an issue too, because it's like, it is connected to your day-to-day life and routine, but it's like how you are of service to you and to others a bit. You know, there's this, it's the transition, and it's in between, you know, your interest, which is the fifth house, and relationship, right? It's sixth house is kind of like the stuff that we don't really want to kind of do like that, but it does give us support. So you get what I'm saying? It's like that type of stuff, right? So anyways, let me continue. You know, if a planet happens to be in a cadent house with you natally, you may want to second guess. I wouldn't say you may want to stay away, but you may want to second guess going to that, you know, planetary line. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm never going to fuck with it. I'm not going to do that. But, you know, that is an accidental debilitation. But another thing to keep in mind too, because, you know, we have not just the astrocartography maps, but the relocated chart. You know, if you've had like your sun in the first house, but you move somewhere and now your sun's in the third, you're going to feel that difference. That energy, you know, that sun in the first energy is going to be, you know, weakened a little bit. And you're not going to feel the effects of sun in the first as much. And that could be frustrating, you know what I mean? So, or not even frustrating, but just it feels different. So that is something to keep in mind as well. And again, like I said, you know, just because something has an accidental debilitation doesn't mean you have to stay far, far away from it. Please don't think that. But it is, you know, things that you have to consider. So if you're like wondering, should I move to my Mars line, my Jupiter line, or my Sun line? You can use these tools like accidental dignity to figure out which planet will actually be the best if they're all aspected pretty much similarly. You get what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm just trying to give you extra tools here. Okay. So there's that, right? And then another thing is, you know, though the next one, what was the next thing I said? Oh, the planet being direct. So, as we know, when planets are direct, they are literally, figuratively direct in the sense of, like, you are able to, like, express that energy. It's no internalized worries or things that are holding you back a little bit. But when a planet is retrograde, you know, you will, you know, so say that you have, like, Mercury retrograde and you want to move to your Mercury line. You may notice that Mercury retrograde energy that you feel natally is expressed even stronger than it typically is, right? And so you will notice you're even more quiet. You have to make even more of an effort to communicate and to put yourself out there and express your ideas and stuff. And you may have to apply yourself a little bit more to tap into those routines and shit like that, right? But another thing to keep in mind is that there may be delays, right? And so you're waiting for that abundance to hit, or that thing that you're looking for with that Mercury line. And it may take a little bit longer than expected, because that's what retrograde energy does. Another thing with retrograde energy too is like the cycles, right? Oh my God, I'm about to tell a story real quick. But like what Mercury retrograde tends to do is give you cycles and cycles and cycles until you get it, until you confront this situation, and it won't stop. And even if you confront it, even if you did what you're supposed to do, you're still gonna see the cycle. And it may not affect you directly, but you'll see it outside of yourself, this same thing over and over and over. And it's very frustrating, because sometimes you did what you're supposed to do, but it's still happening. You're like, ah, deal with this no more. So that's another thing. So again, I'm not saying, hey, you know, someone has like a beautiful Venus, but it's retrograde. Everything about it's great. It's in Libra. You know what I mean? It has nothing but trines and sextiles and even quintiles in that bitch. You know what I'm saying? And then like it is conjunct Aldebaran. No, well, that don't make any sense. It's conjunct Spica. You know what I mean? It's conjunct Spica. So it has like all these like dope ass energies with it. It's in fucking the first it's in like the first house, but now you're gonna move to like Venus midheaven line. You know, it just has all these wonderful things to it. But it's retrograde. I'll be like, nah, go to your Venus line. Just know that you may go through certain cycles and things might be delayed, but you're still going to get the goodness and the benefit of it eventually if you stick to it. You understand what I'm saying? So there's that, right? Another accidental dignity is a planet being swift in motion, which is the speed of a planet, right? That is actually crazy important. It's something that people don't talk about often. It's the speed of the planet. And I kind of touched on it a little bit on TikTok recently while I was talking about like the speed of, what was it? Was it the speed of Mercury, I think? But the speed of a planet is really important too, because that is actually associated with retrograde energy. So when a planet is retrograde, the speed of the planet from our perspective is negative because it's moving backwards. So it's like it's in reverse. So it's not even moving forward, it's moving backwards, right? So it's like it's moving, you know, if you calculate it, it's kind of losing speed and kind of losing the race a little bit. You know what I mean? And so when a planet is moving backwards or moving slowly, then the effectiveness of that planet is basically being expressed by its speed. You understand what I'm saying? And so, you know, you may notice when, you know, of course, when, let's use Mercury retrograde for an example, when Mercury's retrograde, it takes slower for things to actualize. It's because the planet is moving backwards. And then during the shadow period, so when the planet is direct, but the shadow period, the planet is moving forward, yes, but it's slowly moving forward. And that's what I'm talking about with the speed, right? Slowly moving forward. And so that's why the shadow period, things are still slow. There's still cycles that are happening. There's still things that you need to confront. It's a lot better from Mercury being retrograde, but you're still having the effects of it in the shadow period. And that's all connected to the speed of the planet, right? So if I go and move to my Jupiter line, but my Jupiter's slow, then similar to retrograde energy, not as bad, but similar to retrograde energy, the effectiveness of my Jupiter is going to be slowed down too. And so like I can have this beautiful Jupiter, beautifully placed, you know, and it's, but the thing is that like, it's, I get the goodness of the Jupiter energy, but again, it takes a longer time to actualize. You know what I'm saying? So a planet being swift in motion is actually very important. A planet being like, you know, fast. And I would even say too, like I would prefer average speed for the most part when it comes to planets, because, you know, when you look at the speed of the planet, a planet of course could be retrograde, which it's losing speed. A planet could be slow, which is just slowly moving forward. It could be an average speed where it's moving in its typical speed or around it, but then a planet can move really fast too. And when a planet moves really fast, it, you know, do we get the, you know, things that we want of that planet super fast? Yes. But just like with anything fast, it's kind of like the tortoise and the hare. You jumping into things haphazardly, and you have to be able to like know what you're doing, have a plan, and be really effective with that plan in order for you to utilize the speed of a planet appropriately when you want to manifest things or make things happen in your life. You get what I'm saying? And so like, say I want to move to my, you know, moon line, right? Say I want to move to my moon line. I'm trying to get a new space. And, you know, I got like this Airbnb. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to use the Airbnb for like a month, and I'm going to see different like apartments that I want to move to like to settle there. Right. And so I go do that. Right. And then I'm searching for places, and I find this perfect apartment the first day I move in. But they're like, yeah, there's mad people who want this apartment though. So if you want to like jump into the shit, you got to jump into the shit now. and you have this emotional connection to this apartment. You already can see yourself there. It's driving you crazy. It's insane. That's that type of moonline energy. If the moon is moving fast, it happens to be moving fast that day. You know what I mean? Or, oh, not even that day. It can be that day, of course. But if you typically have a fast, if you have a fast moon in your chart, that may happen a lot. You know what I mean? And so, you know, definitely go on like astro.com. Look at the speed of the planets, right? And see how the speed of the planets can, you know, express and explain your life. You'll be surprised how accurate that shit is. It's amazing. I might even do like a space on it or something, but yeah, it's incredible. But I'll even say, like, a part of like astrological manifestation, if you want things to come fast, you know, make sure you're manifesting and, you know, venerating that planet when that planet's in average speed at the very least, but maybe fast speed. But you have to be very careful because things can happen fast for real and you're like, what the fuck? I'm not prepared, you know? So there's that. There is that. The next thing, if the planet is free from combustions, or is in a Kazemi, right? That is a accidental dignity. So, I'm pretty sure I talked about combustions with y'all before. Definitely talked about Kazemis with y'all, but let me break this down too. You know, if you noticed, you know, people have mixed thoughts when it comes to the sun conjuncting, or making a conjunction to a planet, right? A lot of modern astrologers is like, no, it's like you're embodying this energy and it's great and it's awesome. It's a part of your self-expression. But a lot of traditional folks, and again, there's a lot in between. It's like for me, for instance, I'm a modern astrologer, but I take some traditional concepts and I implement it, right? So there's a lot of in-between folks, okay? You know, the sun conjunct the planet, for traditional folks is actually a bad thing. And so you'll notice like in, you know, the chart drawings, you'll see the conjunction between two planets and the lines red. And it's kind of saying this harsh aspect. And you're like, but why, right? Well, it is because how ancient astrologers went about astrology, it was all about visibility, right? So this is why they didn't, you know, acknowledge Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. They could not see Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And so a lot of traditional astrologers now are like, you know, visibility is an important aspect of astrology, and so they continue not to include them. But also visibility is important too, because that's how we are able to see the eclipsing of certain stars. That was how we're able to see like certain things that are happening to a planet. You know, they'll notice the connection between a planet is not visible, how certain things within their community or their civilization will happen. And they're like, oh, there is a connection between me not being able to see this star, this planet, this cosmic body, and, you know, how it's relating to the world. You get what I'm saying? So with that being said, what they're thinking is this, right? When a planet is too close to the sun, we can't see it. We can't see it until like after like 15 degrees. Like for some planets, some people say they see it after like around like after 10 degrees, but it's like 10 to 15 degrees. The planet has to be like 10 to 15 degrees away in order for us to see it, I'm pretty sure, right? If I'm wrong, sorry, but it's around like 10 to 15 degrees. I'm leaning more towards the 15 though. I'll say that. And so if we can't, and the reason why we can't see a planet if the sun is close to another planet, to that other planet, is because the sun's too bright. The sun's too bright. And so we literally can't see it. And so how they interpreted the ancient astrologers, they're like, you know, the ego, you know, the energy that is expressed connected to the sun, like the ego and your self-expression is too bright, it's too loud, and sometimes it gets in the way of the effectiveness and the energy of that planet, right? Of the planet that is there. And so that is conjoined it. And so sometimes, like, it's kind of like this idea of, like, you know, is someone with sun conjunct Mercury smart? Like, yeah, but sometimes that ego get in the way and they end up saying some dumbass shit. that's the whole idea. You get what I'm saying? And so, like, now, like, who's smart? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the kind of essence of it. So it, you know, because Mercury is connected to intelligence and communication, blah, blah, blah. Right? So that's the whole idea. And it's all due to the visibility of a planet. And so to kind of, explain this energy a little bit more with combustions and Kazemis and the difference between it, let's actually define the difference between the two. So, you know, a combustion is if a planet is 18 minutes to, I'll personally say 18 minutes to 8 degrees, you know, away from a planet, right? So that's a combustion. It's a type of conjunction, you know, when the sun and another planet is conjoined, but it's between 18 minutes to 8 degrees away from each other. Okay, that's combustion. And again, we can't really see these planets because the sun's beams are too bright. And so we feel that it is hindering the planet. And because the sun is so bright, it's kind of like the ego so bright and it's so loud that sometimes it gets in the way of the effectiveness of the planet, right? So, like, basically the sun Mercury example I just gave, right? But then there's another type of conjunction called out of beams. And that's if it's between 8 degrees to 10 degrees, right? Or for the people who use a greater orb for sun conjunctions or luminary conjunctions, you could say 8 degrees to 15 degrees, whatever, right? But that's basically, it's called out of beams because, you know, the planet is out of the beams. It's like we really can't see. We can start to see the planet a little bit better. You know what I mean? It's because the sun's beams are not bright, like blazing it, and it's not like blocking the effectiveness of a planet. However, you have to keep in mind too that the planet is further away from the sun. And so, you know, although the sun is not, and the ego's not like overshadowing the planet as much as a combustion, the planet's kind of further away from the sun. And so you're not fully embodying that energy like a combustion would. But then there's a special case called Kazemi, right? And you have to listen to me when I say this. If it's exactly conjoined the sun, if the planet is exactly conjoined to the sun, or if it's within 17 minutes, not 17 degrees, 17 minutes, right? And the reason why, you know, Kazemis are so special is because some of the time we can see the planet, and we can see the planet, if you use like special eyewear, because the planet will literally be at the middle of the sun. So for the people who can gaze the sun and can see a little dot at the middle, like that's the heart of the sun. That's the heart of the sun. So the planet's at the heart of the sun. And so they're like, oh, we can actually see the planet. So this is cool. This is when, like, back in the day would like look at the sun and fuck up their eyes, all the ancients, you know what I'm saying? And so you can see the planet. The planet's at the heart of the sun, is in right in the middle. So it's not, the beams are not blaring, like blaring it out, but you can see it because it's right in the middle of the sun. So because there's visibility there, that's actually a good thing. And Kazemis are seen as the perfect embodiment between the sun and the planet, right? So, you know, if we keep using the sun Mercury example, Mercury and the sun are conjoined with the Kazemi. And so the person's ego, the person's expressions is not getting in the way of their intelligence. They're perfectly combining their intelligence and the communication skills and their, you know, detail orientedness with their self-expression and their, you know, their talents and their ego. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's three different types of conjunctions. There are kazimis, there are combustions, and there is out of beams. Okay. And so with that being said, it is good if a planet is, you know, out of beams, but more so than anything, in a kazimi. Because, you know, the planet is starting to be visible and the sun's rays is not like beaming it out and making it unseen, but it is an accidental debilitation when the planet is combust. Okay? So, I know that was a long ass explanation, but this is important information to know, right? Right. Okay. So, there's that. Then, the next one. So again, I just want to restate this. It's an accidental dignity when there is a kazimi with the planet. There's an accidental debilitation when their planet is combust, right? And I'll say out of beams. I'll say that's more of like a peregrine type of situation. You get what I'm saying? That's what I would feel. More of a peregrine vibe where it's like it's high. I wouldn't say it's a dignity, it's just high. It's like kind of like in the middle, you know what I mean? A little bit better than if, you know, your sun, with the planet's not touching your sun at all, but it's still like not the best, you know what I mean? That type of energy. All right, so next one. Oh, if you know a planet is in a benefic or beneficial, I said benefic, in a beneficial aspect to a benefic or to a fixed star that is fortunate in nature, right? And so let's talk about this, right? So if a planet is making a beneficial aspect to, you know, a benefic like Venus or Jupiter, and it's not Venus or Jupiter, you know, it can't, you know, Venus can't conjunct your own Venus, right? So if a planet is making a good aspect to, you know, a benefic, that is accidental dignity. That's a good thing, especially if it is even making a good aspect to a planet that is of sect as well. That makes it even more wonderful, right? You know, you want to fuck with those. But then also too, if that planet is conjoined, not in a beneficial aspect, but conjoined a fortunate fixed star, that's also a nice thing too, right? So the fortunate fixed stars like Aldebaran and Spica, and, you know, those nice ones, right? That's a good one too. Now for the accidental debilitation, that's if, you know, a planet is aspecting a malefic, which is Mars and Saturn. Some people would include Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto into this as well. They see all the outer planets as, you know, malefics, you know. But, you know, that's if a planet is making a harsh aspect to a malefic planet, or not even a harsh, just aspecting, period. Some astrologers think too. A malefic planet or a harsh fixed star. So some of the harsh fixed stars will be Algol. You know what I mean? Algol is a nasty one. We had a real nasty eclipse with Algol. A real nasty one, man. It was a couple of us, like not last year, but the year before. That's a that one. I always pronounce this incorrectly, which I shouldn't, because this energy is conjunct an important part of my chart. But Alcyone, I think that's how you say it. That's supposed to be a harsh you know, fixed star as well. You know, Castor's not the best. Beetlejuice, not the best. I believe Pollux is not the best either. Toliman, you know, Regulus is a good one. I don't know how people feel about Sirius. I'm not quite sure. Vegas, you know what I mean? And, you know, a lot of the fixed stars that I'm, you know, naming is the Bohinian fixed stars. And if you don't know what that is, that's basically like a group of fixed stars that is, you know, useful and seen as important in medieval astrology, right? And so they like to like connect those, you know, those stars. But there's some fixed stars that is harsh in nature, and there's some fixed stars that are good in nature. So if a planet is making an aspect to them, then it's like, okay, I see you. So for instance, right, my sun is conjunct Vega. If I move to my sun line, you know, that Vega energy is going to be expressed as well. Vegas, I don't really see that much craziness with Vega. It's kind of like a meh type of star when it's not all the way beneficial. It's not all the way harsh. But, you know, Vega is associated with Lyra. It's in Lyra. And Lyra is, you know, it's supposed to be a picture of a lyre, which is a ancient stringed instrument. So if I move to my sun line, you know, I can probably tap in more into my musical abilities. You know what I mean? Things like that. So you have to keep that in mind. You have to do the research when it comes to the fixed stars. But yeah, that could be a thing as well. But if, you know, I move to, you know, my you know, a planet that's near like Algol, you know what I mean? I have a planet. If I have a planet Algol and I move to that, you know, that planetary line, then I'm going to feel that Algol shit. And Algol's crazy. It's very harsh. It's very heavy. Okay. A lot of fighting-y type of energy. Okay. So those are the accidental, you know, dignities and, you know, debilitations and things that you have to keep in mind. So guys, it's not, so the reason why I did this is because I want y'all to know that astrocartography is not just, ooh, Jupiter line, I can find my husband, I can get a lot of abundance. Ooh, Venus line, I can find love and have money. Like, you know, it's not like that, because everyone's planets are aspected differently. And so how it'll express in my chart, how expressing your chart would be totally different. And, you know, trust me, I have so many clients, so many people tell me they moved to their Jupiter line and it was the worst mistake of their life. They moved to their Venus line, they struggle. Moved to their sun line, struggle. All right? I want you guys to keep this shit in mind. It is very important. So I don't want y'all to be moving to these lines, avoiding even malefic lines like Mars and Saturn line, where that would be the best line for you. You'll have the most benefit, because you're so focused on moving into your Jupiter or your Venus line. These are the little things that we have to keep in mind. These are little things that a proper astrocartographer, a proper astrologer who is into astrocartography is doing when looking at your chart. Okay? They may not be doing all of these things. They may do... So, like, I'll be honest, right? My main... I'll tell you my style of doing the astrocartography readings when I used to do them. Remember what I said, the most important thing is the aspects, right? And so what I would used to do is I would look at all the aspects made in your chart, see which ones are the least harsh, and tell you to kind of tap more into those planetary lines instead, that's represented by a planet in which in your chart is not as badly aspected, you know? But if there was like a toss-up, right? I'd be like, okay, well, which one's like really the best? Like, which one should they really consider moving to? Then I'll pull out my bag of trips, see which bound these planets are in, which decan these planets are in, which nakshatra is associated with these things, with these planets, right? And then look at the essential dignity, the accidental dignity. That's when I start to do that, right? Or, you know, another thing too is the like cyclo, photography, you know, see what's the best time for them. Is this the best time to move their Venus line? Their Venus could be lit, but is this a good time? Because in their progress chart, it may not be the best time. You know what I mean? So there's a lot to this. You know, this is not just something that you can just like, oh, you know, Venus line equals good, so let's go with that. Like, no, that's not how it works. This is something that you have to study. You have to really know astrology well in order for you to do this correctly. All right. So I hope this was helpful, y'all. I like the series because you know how much I love astrocartography. But if you guys have any questions or anything, let me know. And I think I touched on anything. If y'all want me to talk about anything else, though, let me know. Holla at me. I'm going to be making some social media for my Better Astrology soon, too. So I would love to talk to y'all through that. Okay. All right, y'all. Peace.
Since we're all on the internet, internet protection is probably at the utmost importance, especially now. I like to do this through Surfshark's VPN services because, you know, they cover you with a VPN. They cover you with a whole bunch of other services as well that protect you while you're online. It's very, very awesome. Right now, in the link of my bio, you can get 80% off of Surfshark VPN for 2 years, all right? 80% off. It is a deal. Now, my favorite thing about Surfshark is that you can add multiple items in there. So you can add your laptop, your phone, your iPad, all of that. And multiple people can put their items in there too, in your family, if you have a big family like me. So check out Surfshark VPN. Go to the link in my bio to get that 80% off and enjoy. All right.